Hi, good evening to everyone. It's a pleasure to welcome your hearty souls. V'lechol ha-mazinim as well. We are looking tonight at the centurion of the 13th century, sponsored as always by Becky and Avi Katz, Le'ila Nishmas Yonah ben Rab Aryeh Leib. The opposition to the Rambam and book burnings and more crusades and the repressive anti-Jewish measures of the Fourth Lateran Council in 1215 would all shape the 13th century. But there was one man who was affected in some way by all of these, still towered over the entire century and centuries to come until today. See, he was known in his hometown as Bonastruk de Porta. Have you heard of him? No. But that means less than nothing to us. We know him as Rav Moshe ben Nachman or the Ramban. You'll notice that the accent is always on the second syllable. Ramban. I think it's all right now. No, I'll make it a little lower then. He's always called the Ramban, second syllable accented, to distinguish him from the Rambam, just because they're phonetically the same. Ramban was born in 1194, a decade before the Rambam died, and Ramban was born and lived most of his life in Girona, in Catalonia. The town of Girona is actually pronounced Girona in Catalonia, in Spain, as you well know. The Spaniards, classical Spanish, the G is silent, so it's really pronounced Gerona. Gerona in the rest of Spain. But there they called it Girona. Girona is about 100 kilometers north of Barcelona, up the eastern coast of Spain, and slightly inland. And the Ramban's neighborhood in the Kal, the Jewish quarter of his day, is well preserved, despite the fact that no Jews lived there after the expulsion in 1492. There's even a old Jewish cemetery on what's still called today Mont Chulik, the Hill of the Jews. So a person can literally walk in the footsteps of the Ramban even today. I don't know if you were with us in Spain, but we did walk through Girona and even visit a place that's called the birthplace of the Ramban. I'm not so sure the Ramban had a satellite dish in his house, but nonetheless, if it's not his actual home, and there are old buildings there, very old buildings, but certainly it's the neighborhood and within a few streets of the Ramban's community. But more important than even walking in the footsteps of the Ramban, we have the ability, if not the privilege, of learning Torah with the Ramban every day, as he was a prolific commentator and writer and philosopher and great leader of Jews as well, and the first to mainstream Kabbalah into the study of Torah. So what was Ramban's early life? Again, he was born in Girona in 1194. He was a Talmud of Reb Yehuda ben Yochar and Reb Nosson ben Meir of Trinke Ta'ilye, the neighboring town, the famous Rabbeinu Yonah of Girona, the author of the classic Shari Tshuva, was a slightly older first cousin of the Ramban. Ramban's mother, Rabbeinu Yonah's father, were brother-sister. And in fact, they became a chutanim as well. Their children married each other. Catalonia was also a center of Kabbalah, and the Ramban began receiving instruction in Kabbalah while still a teenager from Reb Ezra, who lived in Girona, along with the study of medicine, which he practiced for decades. Now, the Reb Ben Yochar had himself learned Kabbalah. He was from a master of Kabbalah, Reb Yitzhak Saginor, and the Ramban learned from him and others as well. The Zohar would first appear in 13th century Spain, but a little later on in the century. So Ramban's study of Kabbalah was not Zohar-based. Ramban wrote his first commentaries on Torah, wrap your minds around this, at age 15. At age 15, he wrote a Rif-style Perush on Maseches Nedarim and Bechoros. There is no Rif on those two Masechtos, and the Ramban filled the gap. While still a teenager, he wrote the Milchamos Hashem, or began writing the Milchamos Hashem. Milchamos was a response to the Balamar's very sharp critique of the Rif. So the Rif took up the cudgels, as it very often did, the Ramban took up the cudgels, defending others, as he often did, especially here the Rif. Soon after, he began teaching Torah in Girona, which he did for decades, founding yeshiva there. He soon thereafter became the Rav in Barcelona, even though he remained resident in Girona for most of his life. And after Rabbeinu Yonah's death in 1263, the Ramban became the chief rabbi of all of Catalonia. His Talmidim were among the greats of Spanish Jewry in the next generation. Primarily known to us is the Rashba, Reb Shlomo Ibn Aderes, and Reb Aaron Halevi, also of Girona, held by some to be the author of the Sefer HaChinuch, but accepted by all as the author of the Berak HaBayis, the commentary on the Torah HaBayis of the Rashba. And Reb Aaron Halevi, known as the Ra'oh, also wrote Chidushim on much of Shas. Ramban had a number of children. We know he had three sons and a daughter. He had Reb Nachman, he had Reb Shlomo, who was the one who married the daughter of Rabbeinu Yonah, and he had a son Yosef, who was a court official in Castile. He had a daughter who married someone named Rav Gershom, and they had a son Levi, known to us as the Ralbag. So Ralbag was the grandson of the Ramban. Ramban died in Israel, but that's really jumping ahead of our story. We'll get back to him and that a little later. But the Ramban's brilliance was acknowledged by all in his generation, in subsequent generations. Spanish Jewry simply called him Harav, which of course is an honorific that many have used, but in his day, you refer to Harav, everyone knew that it would refer to the Ramban. And he had a very gentle nature, but a commanding nature as well. And he was an ideal leader. And his first foray into Jewish leadership and peacemaking was, as it often is, a failure, but it later bore fruit. And this is how the Ramban first comes to the attention of the public. Granted, he'd written his Perush on the Riv, on Nedarim and Bechoros, but nonetheless, there was a certain controversy in Spain that the Ramban delved into and had the following results. No doubt, like all great leaders, the Ramban did not live a life that was free of controversy, and he plunged in to try to resolve the acrimonious dispute that riveted Provence and Spain in the 13th century over the writings of the Rambam. Keep in mind that Provence and northern Spain, where the Ramban lived, are really not that far apart. Ramban is in northeast Spain and Provence is southern France, so geographically they're very close, even though ideologically and culturally they were distinct. So after a debate that raged for decades, in the 1220s, Reb Shlomo min Hahar, Reb Shlomo of Montpellier, which is in southern France, pronounced the Cherem on some of the works of the Rambam, specifically the Mor Nevuchim and the Sefer Hamada, the beginning of Mishnah Torah, because he saw the potential that they had in leading Jews astray. So Cherem was a prohibition on Jews owning or studying these works of the Rambam. Rabbeinu Yonah, the Ramban's cousin, joined his Rebbe, Reb Shlomo min Ahar, in this Cherem, and Rabbeinu Yonah was an especially fierce opponent of the Rambam's Sfarim. In fact, traveling across Spain and Provence and France, exhorting the masses to reject the Rambam. In return, the defenders of the Rambam, primarily in Spain, put Reb Shlomo min Ahar into Cherem, and they had a good old-fashioned Jewish brouhaha, where everyone is putting everyone else in Cherem. Some of the anti-Rambam forces took it another level. They denounced the Rambam's writings to the church as anti-Christian, which some of it was. And in Paris in 1233, the Rambam's books were burned in the public square in Paris. Now, this was a brutal wake-up call, and many of the Rambam's saner detractors did not take kindly to that, and they realized the inherent danger. So it was then the Ramban intervened in an attempt to tone down the dispute. So he wrote what's called the letter to the French rabbis. That's printed in the Kitvei Ramban today. And in essence, Ramban supported and criticized both sides. Always a good position to be in a machlokes. You find something good to say about everybody, and you find something to criticize about everybody. He sent a letter to the French rabbi, sent it across Spain as well, supporting in principle the opposition to some writings of the Rambam, but being very critical of the methods and tactics of Reb Shlomo and his followers in implementing their opposition, especially in light of the mutual charamim and the book burnings. So too he criticized those who put Reb Shlomo into Cherem, and then he sought to carve out a neutral territory whereby both sides could tone down the rhetoric, writing the mutual charamim were wrong and misplaced, and that people must recognize the basic difference between French and Spanish Jewry, and in fact the difference in the Rambam's target audience. So Ramban wrote that French Jewry need not study the philosophical areas of the Rambam, as their faith was pure, and there was no tradition of philosophical speculation in France. But because philosophical speculation, especially Aristotelian and then Islamic thought, was rampant among Spanish Jewry, that engendered a concomitant weakening of their commitment to mitzvahs, so he maintained that the Rambam wrote specifically for such a society, so they would know how to refute philosophical challenges to Judaism. In essence, it was important for Spanish Jews to learn the Rambam, and important for French Jews not to learn the Rambam. He suggested a compromise. There should be different limits on the study of science and philosophy in France and in Spain. In the short term, his compromise was rejected, of course. Who wants to compromise? Because you had extremes on both sides, both opposed to what the Ramban had to offer, and the middle was not really involved in machlokes, so therefore was not accepted. But in fact, in the long term, that became the differing norms of Spanish and French and German Jewry. Now, as often happens in Jewish machlokos, both sides eventually lost. Many people centuries later held that the readiness of Spanish Jewry to convert during the years of Inquisition was attributable to their comfort with philosophical speculation. They were more in the loop than mitzvot suffered as a result. So if they had the ideas correct, what's the difference with particular religion they chose? Not only that, when on Erev Parshas Chukas in the summer of 1242 in the same public square in Paris where the Rambam's works had been burned 9 years earlier, 24 cartloads of the Talmud, all the copies of the Talmud in France, all handwritten, 12,000 copies in all, were burned at the order of King Louis IX. For that and other things, he was canonized. St. Louis, a famous city in Missouri, all at the direction of Pope Gregory IX. Then the Rambam's opponents realized they'd gone too far, and they regretted their actions. The church recognized that this was a very powerful weapon they could wield against Jews, book burning, and it, unfortunately, it come originally from us. Reb Shlomo Menahar was already deceased, but the Ramban's cousin, Rabbeinu Yonah, did public penance. He publicly retracted his opposition to the Rambam, and he vowed to travel to the Rambam's grave in Tveria and ask Mechila before a minion of Jews. So in fact, he left Girona, went south, but he was detained first by the Jews in Barcelona and then in Toledo, where he taught Torah. They didn't let him leave. He taught Torah, quoting the Rambam always with reverence, but Rabbeinu Yonah died in Toledo, never having made it to the land of Israel. Unfortunately, for French Jewry, it was too late, and the loss of the Talmud effectively ended the era of the Balei Tosfos and Jewish scholarship in France for centuries, some might say even until today. Now, no doubt this episode chastened the Jewish world, which was a good thing, so when subsequent decades, later on in the century, new young toughs wanted similar bans against the Rambam, they never caught the public imagination. more unfortunately, book burning as a weapon against the Jewish people would now be a common feature for the next seven centuries. Nevertheless, of all the protagonists in this debate, only the Ramban emerged with his reputation intact, if not enhanced, for his efforts at reconciliation and for the middle ground that he had struck, trying to give something to both sides and recognizing the difference in the populations, which of course is a natural skill of any leader. To us, Ramban is most famous for his writings, both his original works and his commentaries on the works of others. Ramban has an enormous paper trail that he left behind, all of which are the ultimate testimony to his greatness. So I already mentioned his addenda to the Rif, his defense of the Rif from the assault of the Balamor ben Ezrachi HaLevi. Ramban also wrote a critique of the Rambam Sefer HaMitzvos, where we discussed this last time. Rambam began the Sefer HaMitzvos with 14 Shoroshim, his methodology, how to extract, how to derive the Tayag Mitzvos. The Rambam was wont to attack the Bahag, the Balalachas Gedolos, in his enumeration of the mitzvahs. So Ramban defended the Bahag from the Rambam's attacks, and then commenting on the Rambam himself, the Ramban's Hasogos on the Sefer HaMitzvos. He took issue with some of the Rambam's methodology, and he differed with him on the enumeration of some of the mitzvos as well. Now all this is printed in the standard Sefer HaMitzvos of the Rambam, with the Ramban's criticisms of the Rambam matched on the other side of the daf by defense of the Rambam of the Megillas Esther of Yitzchak de Leon about a century and a half later. Ramban therefore appended to the Sefer HaMitzvos what he called mitzvos sheshochach oson harav, in terms of the mitzvahs to say, mitzvahs that the Rambam forgot, that he should have mentioned. That is to say, Ramban counted 17 mitzvahs asay, positive commandments, and 17 mitzvahs los asay, prohibitions that the Rambam did not count. So the Ramban took out other mitzvahs and placed these in, rearranging the order, but keeping the basic numbers the same. 613 mitzvahs, 248 mitzvahs asay, 365 mitzvahs los asay. The numbers were the same, but how they're to be counted are different. So for example, famously, mitzvahs los asay 1, Ramban counts as a mitzvah the Rambam forgot about, shelo nishkach mimenu emunas elohus. It's not enough, like the Rambam says, the first mitzvah, leida sheishom eloka, to know there's a God. Ramban held that to love also. We should never forget at any moment our emunah b'Hashem. They say a Jew has to live every conscious moment with an awareness of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Or the second mitzvah that he has overlooked by the Rambam, shelo nishkach maimed har sinai v'lo nasir asomi daitenu. We should never forget the revelation at Sinai. The Torah says, Pentishkach asadvar mashal roi nefo. You should not forget what happened. So according to the Ramban, every day we have to remind ourselves of Maimon Har Sinai. Those are some mitzvahs I say. In the mitzvahs I say, even more famously, there's a mitzvah the Ramban counts that of course has ramifications until today. The fourth mitzvahs I say that the Rambam forgot. Very famous, quoted weekly, if you follow any of the halachic or Torah literature in Eretz Yisrael. Mitzvah Revius, I'll read it at some length. The fourth mitzvah that the Rambam forgot. Shenitztavinu l'oresha sa'aret asher nasan akel yisbarach v'yisala v'seinu Avram Yitzchak and Yaakov. We're commanded to conquer, to inherit the land that God gave to our forefathers. V'lo nazvo b'yad zuloseinu min ha'umos olishmama. And we're not allowed to leave it in the hands of the nations or dazzle it. V'omru lahem, this is the pasuk, v'arashtem es sa'aret v'yishavtem ba. You should conquer the land and dwell therein. Ki lochem nasan because I gave you the land to inherit, and you must therefore make it your possession. Shelo yanichu mimeno makom. We cannot leave one area of Eretz Yisrael unpopulated by Jews, not under Jewish sovereignty. And he says this hora is a mitzvah. Lo yiud v'haftacha. It's not an expression of the destiny of the Jewish people or promise God makes us. Ramban said, no, that's a mitzvah part of Tayag. That's what Chachamim called Milchemes Mitzvah. It's a mitzvah to conquer the land of Israel. And he's strong about it. Al tishtabesh, don't make a mistake and say, ke mitzvah zos hi a mitzvah b'milchemes shiva amamim shenitztavu l'abdom. Don't say this mitzvah applied just to the seven Canaanite nations that we're commanded to destroy. Ein adavar kein. It's not so. Shonitztavinu l'harok homo sohem b'ilochamom el imanu. We are commanded to kill those nations when we fought them. True. And if they want to make peace with us, nashlim imahem, we make peace with them, and we leave them to live there under the conditions that we're aware of, that's fine. We can deal with the residents of the land in a particular way. Aval ha'aretz, the land itself, lo naniach osa biyadom v'lo biyad zu losam in ha'umos, but the land itself we cannot leave in their hands or in the hands of any of the nations, bidor min adoros, in any generation. Every generation has the obligation to conquer Eretz Yisrael. Harein istavina b'kibush v'chol adoros. We're commanded to conquer the land of Israel in every generation. And he says, with the Chachamim called in the midst of Diras Eretz Yisrael, dwelling in the land of Israel, Akol hu mimitzas aseh hazeh shenistavina l'reshes aretz v'loshevez bo. That comes from this positive commandment. In Cain, he mitzvah haseh ledoros mischaif kol yochid mimenu. It's a positive commandment for all generations. Every individual is obligated. Va'afilu bizman golus kayadu b'talmud b'mkomos arbe. Even in the time of exile, every Jew is commanded to go conquer or to join the nation in conquering the land of Israel. So needless to say, this comment of Ramban was a staple of Rav Kook, Tzvi Yehuda Kohen Cook, Zecher Tzadik Livracha. It was the motivating factor in Gush Emunim in the 70s, still animates the settlers of Yehuda Shomron and those of the lamented Gush Katif. And I tell you, there's not a week that goes by, if you read any of the Torah and the Emunim of Eretz Yisrael, this Ramban is always quoted. Granted, there's the Torah alongside it, there trees have been felled trying to explain why the Rambam did not count this as a mitzvah. The Megillas Esther says right across from Ramban on this, there's a reason why the Rambam omitted this mitzvah of conquering Eretz Yisrael. It's because it's not Noheg anymore. That's the famous Megillas Esther that I guess a lot of people living in the exile still rely on. On the other hand, as you see, you could see this in the writings of many Israeli Rabbanim constantly, there's so many Jews today who are Makpid on every chumrah in kashrus, in Shabbos, a minhag will emerge, and they'll be very quick to embrace it. So how logical then is it just to willy-nilly dismiss what the Ramban calls a mitzvah saseh min haTorah, one of the 613 commandments to conquer and hold sovereignty over the land of Israel in its entirety? So that's the Ramban's commentary on the Sefer Mitzvos. He also wrote a commentary to much of the Talmud that we have called the Chidushei Ramban. He wrote a brief Musar message to his son called the Igeres HaRamban that you find in many Sidurim today. Have it sometimes the last page or next to last page. It's just really a few pages in length dealing with the matters of Kedusha, purity, family life, dealing with people, etc. Ramban's writings, his essays and letters provide to us in very clear language the Ramban's philosophy. In our day, it's been annotated and even translated into English, both in Hebrew and English, through the efforts of Rabbi Charles Chevel, the Masada Rav Kook, and Feldheim here. The Kedvei Ramban, the Ramban's writings are masterful in their analyses of a wide variety of topics. And it's a shame it's not studied as it should be. It's whether Ramban articulated a philosophy of Torah in a coherent and very erudite fashion. So he wrote, for example, I shouldn't say he wrote. He has, for example, an essay called Torah Hashem Tamimo about the superiority of Torah. He has there a commentary on Koheles and Shir Hashirim. He has general Musa for Rosh Hashanah. All of these, by the way, apparently were delivered first as drushos in various shuls in either Girona or in Barcelona. And you could tell from the context, some of them were meant for Talmidei Chachamim, that was the audience. Others were for lay audiences, but these were drushos that were then transcribed. He wrote a classic, Shar HaGmul, about reward and punishment, about Gan Eden and Olam Haba. He wrote their commentary on Sefer Iyov, Torah Sa'adam, on a variety of different halachic areas, and the Sefer HaGeula about matters of redemption and the fulfillment of the prophecies of the Nevi'im, even suggesting that the redemption would begin in the year 1358 and then be completed within a half century, conveniently choosing, as was the custom of the time, a date that was beyond the lifespan of anyone in the audience, that people would accept, not lose hope in the concept of Geula without experiencing disappointment. If you predict the imminence of Geula with a specific date in one's lifetime and it doesn't come, then you look pretty foolish. I put you on notice, by the way, there's some Christian group that's predicted the apocalypse for May of 2011, just a few months away. All right, we'll talk about it again in June. Now, others might hold that the Ramban was not simply being, you know, God forbid, facetious, but rather he held, through whatever calculations, that that was a propitious time for Mashiach, who then did not come for other reasons. And you have all these calculations. And in fact, many times, great things, stupendous things, horrifying things happened in Jewish life around the time of these predictions. 1358, I will discuss this next week already, was right after the Black Death, where millions of people across the world were killed, including many Jews, and people saw that as Chevelei Mashiach. Another time, Tach V'Tach in 1648-49. Another time were predictions of great upheaval. And that's when Shabtai Tzvi filled that gap. In any event, that prediction did not, as far as we know, come true. Ramban's major work, from our perspective, was his Perush Al HaTorah, began late in his life, took several years to write, completed only in Israel towards the very end of his life. It's interesting. Ramban writes in Sefer Vayishlach, it says that Rachel died, and Vayihi od kivras eretz lovo efrosa. They were just a measure, distance to come to Efros, and there Rachel dies. So Ramban writes that Menachem Perash Kivras Lashon Kabir Mahalach Rav, that where Rachel died was a great distance from Beit Lechem. And that's how he understood it. Menachem Ben Suruk, of course, was Spain, even before Rashi's time, France. Zekosafi Trilo, Ramban says. That's what he thought. It meant a great distance. Vachshov shezochisi uvose anili Rishalayim. Shevach lokel atova meitiv. Now that I've merited to come to Yerushalayim, praise to God who is good and does good, ra'isi be'enai, saw with my own eyes, she'em in kvuras rachel beis lechem afilu mil, that is less than 2,000 amos from kever rachel to beit lechem itself. So in fact, now the pshat in the pasuk is the opposite of what Menachem said, but it is exactly like Rashi said, midas ha'aretz, it's just a very short distance. Nothing like being an eyewitness. Now, in style, the Ramban's Perush Al HaChumash is a classic because it's one of the most comprehensive commentaries on the Torah, far more comprehensive than Rashi or Ibn Ezra. In fact, Ramban will very often begin by citing Rashi's comment or the Ibn Ezra's comment. their pshat, usually to disagree with one or the other, and then he'll offer his own interpretation from the simple meaning of the pasuk, sometimes to broader themes of the pasuk, of the parsha itself, or of Jewish life. So for example, in Parshas Toldos, discussing the Be'eros, the wells that Yitzchak dug that were maliciously refilled by the Pelishtim, Ramban writes that the first two, Esek and Sitna, hatred and enmity, parallel the first two Beis HaMikdash. But the third one was called Rechavot, Hu Abayis HaAsid Sheibona B'mehera V'Yomeinu. That parallels the third Beis HaMikdash that will be built in the future, the near future we hope, V'Yasa Below Rivu Matzah, that will be built without any quarrels or acrimony, V'Hakel Yarchiv Es Guleinu, and God will expand our boundaries. Or in his very extensive commentary to the story of Bereishis, the first parak of Bereishis, Ramban posits that there was only one creation, that God created just one thing, matter. The hu achome harishon, that was the first substance, nikra layavanim hayuli, it was called by the Greeks hayuli, primordial matter. Matter. The achar hayuli lo bara davar, and after God created that, in the Torah he says that's what tohu and bohu are. Tohu was the form and bohu was some substance, matter itself. That was the bracious bor Elokim. Everything else, yatsar v'asa. Everything else was formed from that. Ki mimenu hotzi akol v'lbish atziros v'tikein osam. From there everything else took form. From that solitary primordial matter, everything else followed, or dare I say, evolved. But everything came from an initial substance and then just flowed according to God's timetable. Or famously, in this week's Sedra, Parshas Truma, Rabban explained that the function of the Mishkan was this, the Sora Mishkan, who, the whole secret of the Mishkan, that God's glory that rested on Sinai should dwell within Benistar in a hidden way, meaning the Mishkan, the Beis HaMikdash, has one primary purpose. It's a permanent reminder of Sinai, a living Sinai. Ramban became one of the first commentators to incorporate Kabbalistic language and ideas in a Torah commentary, usually introduced with the phrase Ve'al Derech HaEmes. About 100 times you find in the Ramban's commentary, he'll give his pshat and then he'll say Ve'al Derech HaEmes, by the way of truth, and then very cryptically he quotes a few psukim and a few lines and you have to figure out what exactly he means. Sometimes he'll just say, in this parsha there's a sod, and go figure it out. But in this context, Kabbalah means an esoteric part of Torah that describes the interactions of God and His world in very anthropomorphic terms, such as the very terminology might lead the simple reader who understands it literally into misconstruing the nature of God and thereby distorting the Torah. So Ramban chose to discuss the ideas of Kabbalah in very sparing language, using either catchphrases or psukim that made the point, referring to this or that midah of Hashem, but it remains very enigmatic. It has to be learned and understood, preferably with a teacher, and it really is the area of sod. Now we also find in Ramban's commentary areas of sharp disagreement between Ramban and the Rambam. The Rambam always minimized the miracles of the Torah. Rambam tried to limit the actual deviations of nature to very few instances, because he held the whole Chochmah of Hashem is in the Bria. That's how he came. Avram came to God, seeing God as the Borei Olam. Because Ramban saw miracles as primary expressions of the Hashgacha. So too, the Rambam understood all references to angels in the Torah as visions, that the recipients had and not actual physical experiences that occurred in real time. So for example, the Rambam maintains that the three angels that visited Avram after his milah, or the angel that wrestled with Yaakov, all these, the Rambam says, were maros hanavuah. They were prophetic visions, but not something that actually happened. There's a danger in that from a number of perspectives, but Ramban disagreed vehemently, even beyond the danger. And he asks questions in a sardonic way. So it's all a vision. So then Avram didn't serve them food, and Sarah didn't bake anything for them, and Lo didn't serve his visitors any food. And now the people of Sodom, who saw these malachim when they came to Sodom, they also were gifted with prophecy. And if it's all a vision, so why did Yaakov limp after the vision with the angel if it didn't happen? So of course the Rama might say it was the psychosomatic effect of Yaakov's vision. But nonetheless, Ramban writes, all these things are sur l'sham'am, afki l'hamin b'ham. He said you can't even listen to it, much less believe it, and explains each instance. And in fact, as part of their shlichus, malachim can take physical form in order to carry out God's will. Ramban was also much keener than Rashi in maintaining the chronology of the Torah. He rarely resorted to a mukdam u'muuchar ba'Torah, that there is no set chronology. Well, Rashi says the general chronology, sometimes the Torah distorts, changes the chronology for its own purposes. That Ramban didn't like, and almost always he'll justify the order. For example, we have in our Sedras now, when were the parshios of Truma Tetzavet taught? Before Chayto Egel or after Chayto Egel? So Rashi says, Ein Mukta Mucha B'Torah. They really were taught after the Chayto Egel. The Ramban says, no, they were taught before. It's part of his whole understanding of Mikdash and Karbanos, is not B'di'avad institutions, but rather L'chadchila institutions. And finally, the Ramban offers a very famous commentary at the end of Parshas Bo that we should think about every day as to why we don't see open miracles anymore. The Torah is filled with miracles. Yetzias Mitzrayim was filled with miracles. So why don't we see miracles anymore today? He says, "Uvavur kekarosh baruch hu lo yasa osu mufes b'chol dor le'inei korosh ha-kofer." He says, God is not going to perform a wonder in every generation just so he can convince every heretic, every Rasha that he exists. But he did something else. Yitzave osanu shenase tomet zikaron va'oz l'shel ro'einenu. He says, rather than perform a miracle, God gave us remembrances and signs to what our eyes saw. And so we should be able to convey it to our children, our grandchildren, Lador Acharon. What are these signs? Tefillin. That's who he's writing. It's the Parsha of Tefillin. Every day put on Tefillin, see mezuzah, it's all references to Yetzias Mitzrayim. Whenever we have a mitzvah, Zeichel Yetzias Mitzrayim, we remind ourselves of what happens. It's not necessary to see any more miracles. V'chein kol kayotzi b'amitzvos rabos, Zeichel Yetzias Mitzrayim, so to the many miracles that remember the Exodus, ha'kol lios lona b'chol adoros, edus b'movsim shleishtaku, all as signs, as testimonies to the wonders that occurred, that they should not be forgotten. There shouldn't be any opening for heretics to deny their faith in God. Why? Listen to this. A person buys a mezuzah for one zuz. Well, those were the days you could buy a mezuzah for a zuz. But you buy a mezuzah for a zuz, v'kavu b'pischo, you hang it on your doorpost, your entrance, v'niskaveim b'inyano, and you understand what it means, mezuzah, you see it on the way in and out of your homes, kvar hoda b'chida sha'olam, uv'yidiyas habor v'ashkochaso. The mezuzah contains ideas about the creation, about the Creator, about his providence, about prophecy. V'hemin b'chol pinos ha-Torah, believes in every area of the Torah. Milvad shehodo shechesed ha-borei gadol ma'od al osei ritzono. Aside from the fact that God's kindnesses overwhelm his faithful, for which we offer gratitude, shotziono me'oso avdus l'cheirus, He took us out from servitude to freedom. The Chavod Gadol is Kosav Osein HaChavitzim B'Yerashimo, and he awarded great, conferred great honor to our fathers who desire to revere him. Ramban, like Rashi and the Rambam before him, really transformed the study of Torah. Come now to the Ramban's last days, and among the more famous writings of the Ramban was an episode that shaped the last years of his life. In 1263, King James I of Aragon ordered the Ramban to participate in a debate with primarily Catholic priests, including in their number an apostate Jew named Pablo Cristiani, about the relative claims of Judaism and Christianity and why Jews should not have to convert. So this was not uncommon in the Middle Ages and thereafter. The Jews were forced to participate in and Jews forced to watch and listen to these debates. Ramban here, it was called the Disputation at Barcelona, was in his capacity as chief rabbi of Catalonia, the acknowledged Gadol Hador, and this particular debate was unique. And the Ramban demanded and received from the king complete freedom of expression. In many debates, certainly many that follow this one, the Jewish participants were not allowed to, so to speak, defame Christianity. That is to say, they could not respond by pointing out weaknesses in the arguments of their interlocutors, or contradictions, or illogical claims in Christianity. They were not allowed to respond. So think of a debate in which one side cannot respond to the claims of the other, and you know the deck is stacked. This disputation of Barcelona was rare in that the deck was not stacked. It took place over four sessions in July of 1263 in the Palace of Aragon in Barcelona. The palace also still stands, we were there a few years ago, and was a public spectacle, it was a major event of the day. Jews were forced to attend, but also in attendance were the elites of Catalonian, Aragonian society, as well as church dignitaries, bishops from all over. It was entertainment. The premise was that the apostate would prove the truth of Christianity, that Jesus was the Messiah, from the Talmud itself. And if he was successful, then the Jews should logically and rightly have to convert. All the arguments were preserved by the Ramban in writing, the Vikuach HaRamban, and despite the freedom of speech, the Ramban, no holds barred, was warned several times to restrain himself, which for the most part he didn't. He would apologize and then go on. For the Christians, it was a pathetic display, and they brought sources. Friar Paul quoted Lo Yoso Shevet Mihuda from a Chokek Mibein Raglov Ad Kievo Shiloh. The scepter shall not depart from the tribe of Yehuda until Shiloh Moshiach comes. The argument was, you see, Yehuda has no power anymore because Moshiach has already come. Ramban says all the pasuk means is that whenever there's a king in Israel, he has to come from Shevet Yehuda. Friar Paul quoted a Medrash that Mashiach was born on the day of the Churban. So he's come already. And Paul mocked the Ramban. How could he be 900 years, no, he'd be 1,200 years old already, 1,300 years old, if you say he hasn't come. He had to have come. Ramban responded that the Medrash is an idea, it's not an historical account. And in any event, the Churban took place after Jesus was born, so what are you talking about? After Jesus died, for that matter. Friar Paul quoted the famous Perek Nun Gimel of Yeshayahu about the suffering servant. The Ramban said, of course, it's a reference to the people of Israel who suffer under the yoke of Christianity. And on and on. Ramban didn't budge. Ramban even minimized the role that Mashiach plays in Jewish life, saying that we're better off under a benevolent king like King James than having to fight wars for Mashiach. And the Christians convinced no one, and Pablo Cristiani was shamed. Ramban ridiculed his ignorance of Torah, and the king announced at the end of the disputation, after four sessions, maybe five, there's another one held in a shul, King James said of Ramban, I've never seen a man who was so wrong and yet argued his case so well. and he awarded the Ramban 300 gold coins. Nonetheless, King James came to the main shul in Barcelona the next Shabbos and forced Jews to listen to his sermon, exhorting them to convert to Christianity nonetheless. And the Jews didn't listen. By the way, this became a pattern in a number of ways. For centuries, even down to Tsarist Russia, priests and bishops would come to Shul Shabbos morning and preach to the assembled that they should convert to Christianity. And that's the pattern that we see, that Jews tune out whenever the preacher gets up Shabbos morning, whatever religion he's from. Now, there was another consequence. Rare thereafter was the disputation in which the Jewish participants were allowed to speak freely, so no future disputation had the electrifying impact on the Jewish community as did this one. Most others, think for example of the disputation at Tortosa in 1213, 1214, ended very badly for the Jews. Now, despite the royal guarantee of free and unfettered speech, within a short time the church decided to prosecute the Ramban for blasphemy, and the king could not protect him. What happened was, the church claimed that they had prevailed in the debate, to which the Ramban then decided to write the Sefer HaVikuach with both sides of the debate, and that they claimed was blasphemous, because Ramban had been promised free speech during the debate, but nothing gave him the right to put in writing these ideas. Ramban had to flee Aragon and Catalonia, first traveling to southern Spain, where he spent 3 years, during which time, by the way, he began writing his commentary on the Torah. After 3 years, Ramban sailed for the land of Israel. He arrived in Akko in the month of Elul in 1267, spent Rosh Hashanah in Yerushalayim, was shocked and horrified when he arrived in Yerushalayim to find that only two Jews lived there, two brothers who were dyers, who were living in terrible deprivation because of how the Crusaders had ransacked and run down the city. They were the Jewish presence, these two brothers. They were joined every Shabbos by a million of Jews, a million in Yerushalayim of Jews every Shabbos, but otherwise it was just the two of them, and the Ramban sought to rectify that immediately. He set aside a house for a shul that became known as the Ramban Shul, opened in 1267 and survived intact until the Jordanians destroyed it after 1948. It exists once again. It was reopened in 1967, just a few months after the war, and exactly 700 years after it was built. And of course, today you can daven in the Ramban Shul in the Old City. Ramban obtained the Sefer Torah. He attracted Jews to Yerushalayim, and thenceforth, literally until today, the city has always had a sizable Jewish population, at least the minyan. Ramban himself lived in Akko, where the larger Jewish community was, and there the Ramban died on the 11th day of Nisan in the year 1270 at the age of 76. Very curiously, Ramban's burial place in Israel is unknown, and it's claimed to be in different parts of Israel, in Yerushalayim, in Hebron, in Akko, in Haifa. We don't know. In summary, Ramban remains for us a legendary figure, a giant of Torah, a great leader, a shepherd who soothed and reassured a beleaguered people, and a person whose many words, inspire and enlighten us until today. He is the centurion of the 13th century. Next week, we will look at the 14th century. You're cordially invited. I thank you all very much. Thank you.